For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you gave me clothing. I was sick, and you took care of me. I was in prison, and you visited me. And the righteous will ask, when, Lord, when did we do these things? And the Lord will respond, truly I tell you, just as you did it to the least of these, you did it to me. On May 17th, 1943, in a service that I imagine had a few more people in the pews than today, it was announced during our service that Asbury First had officially purchased two dilapidated mansions at 1040 and 1010 East Avenue. The senior minister at the time, the Reverend Dr. Weldon Crosland, had big plans for what he would do once he tore down the mansion at 1040. He had in mind a huge church, what he called an edifice for God, ourselves, and our city, full of strength and beauty and grace. Spoiler alert, he got his wish. It took a while. 5 separate campaigns and many, many years of hard work, but eventually this beautiful neo-Gothic space, this sanctuary, was built. He didn't have as many ideas for 1010. Originally, of course, he thought he would just tear it down. They thought they would tear it down to make room for an even bigger church. Dr. Crosland was nothing if not a dreamer. Ministers, am I right? Though just as they were about to raise it, to tear it down, to demolish that building, they decided to hold off on demolishing 1010 East Avenue, thinking that maybe, just maybe, it still had some use as, quote, a community house. Little did they know. In addition to the countless classes and potlucks and receptions held over the last 80 years in that space, it has been the place where children have met their adoptive parents, where couples met and fell in love with one another, where families have mourned the loss of a loved one. When Tom Hildebrandt came through last year, ready to make a gift for the Outreach Center on behalf of the Davenport Hatch Foundation, for which we thank them, he said, you know, this was the place where my parents were married. Maybe yours were as well. In other words, friends, 1010 East Avenue has not only served as a community house, but as a community home. If those walls could talk, they would tell stories of God's grace, of laughter and joy, and of true Christian fellowship, as so many of us have experienced firsthand. Though if we're honest, it's been a little while, and not just because of the pandemic. As many will know, over the last few years, 1010 has gotten less and less use throughout the course of the week. Other than the Dining and Caring Center, which uses the basement daily at 1010, the rest of the rooms sit virtually empty outside of Sunday mornings, and that was before the pandemic. And yet the need for a house for the community, a community home, has never been greater. After all, think of how much Rochester has changed over the last 80 years. Nearly half of our children live in poverty. Nearly 1 in 5 in extreme poverty. And we now bear the dubious distinction as a community of being third in poverty per capita among the nation's largest 75 cities. At the same time, The generational toll of redlining and other racist practices have meant that too often the brunt of poverty has been borne on the backs of people of color. And that too was before the pandemic. The full human cost of the last few months of this last year have yet to be fully realized, but already, anecdotally, friends, we are receiving more daily calls, more pleas for help, more requests for our services than at any time ever before in our past. People are in need, and I fear this is only the beginning. What the next few years will hold, we don't know, but I do know this. We want to be in a place to address it. We want to be in a place where we can meet the challenges ahead of us. We have this vision as a congregation of doing more good. It is part of our Christian commitment. It's the way that we at Asbury First have answered Christ's call to love God and to love our neighbor as ourselves, remembering what Christ told us, just as you did it to the least of these, you did it to me. Fortunately for us, over the last 80 years, as Rochester has changed, so have we. We've made it a priority to try and answer the call of the gospel, to reach out and find ways of meeting the needs of our community. To be clear, this has always been a part of who we are. As I've been reading through our history, as I've looked through the archives, I recognize it is littered over the last 200 years with the way this congregation has responded to the changing needs of our world. But in the last 80 years, friends, it has become a core part of our identity. Yes, we are known for the height of our steeple, but more for the reach of our people. This is a place that cares about meeting the needs of the community and has for some time. In some ways, it began with the storehouse. Some of you have heard me tell this story before, but it's one that bears repeating. At some point in 1965, a man came to the minister at the time and requested some help getting clothing. A woman named Dolly Rugg, a small woman with a big heart, tiny but mighty, heard of the need and jumped to action. Only she didn't just meet the need of this one man. She thought if he needed help, then certainly there were others out there who might need some help as well. And so she recruited her friends, Jean Billington, Mary Morin, Donna Steele, amongst others, Ada Finley, to come and to join her in starting something that might respond. They requisitioned a room, that is, a closet in the second floor of, you guessed it, 1010 East Avenue, and solicited the congregation for clothing donations. And so it was in October of 1965 that the Samaritan Storehouse, later shortened to just the storehouse, though home has been in the name from the beginning, was born. In the first few months, they served 150 people, men, women, and children, and the need only grew. Over the next 56 years, the storehouse would grow from a closet in 1010 to a room in 1010 to the second floor of 1010 to the basement of 1040, none of them inaccessible places and none of them adequate for the needs of that growing ministry. Today, they serve nearly 6,000 families in the course of a year, referred by hundreds of agencies from around Rochester. It is one of the few places in Rochester where people can get free clothing in a hospitable place. Some have heard me tell the story before that it was actually on a tour of the storehouse, standing in that beautifully appointed waiting room, making the best of a bad situation, that I decided this is the kind of church that I want to serve. For I was naked, and you gave me clothing. Though the storehouse was just the beginning, Some will remember the Reverend Margie Mason, our minister for outreach, who in May of 1991 had pulled together a small group of people to consider how we might respond to the changing needs of poverty in the Rochester area. And just before they broke for the summer, Margie Mason said to the group, "I want to ask you a question that you can prayerfully consider over the summer." The question was simple: what can we do to help others? Maybe you've been asking yourself something similar. One of the members of that group, a retired school teacher named Bill Lisi, couldn't get the question out of his head. Until one day, it hit him. What about a soup kitchen? He pitched the idea to Reverend Mason, who liked it and told him to run with it. And so Bill Lisi, along with Rand Warner and Joan Phillips and Kathy Wilbur, amongst many others, I don't mean to forget anyone in the story, began to go and visit soup kitchens around Rochester to see what they could see, to learn what they could learn. At one of them, the Open Door Mission, Bill Lisi struck up a relationship with a few of the guests until finally he asked them one day, "Would you ever be willing to come to Asbury First for a meal?" At which point the guest responded simply, "I've walked further," which reminds me of what one of the guests told us when we asked about whether or not a couple of years ago we should move down further into the city. And the guest replied simply, "I hope you don't. This is the only nice place I'm invited." Reverend Mason took several volunteers, including some volunteers from the storehouse, down to Washington, D.C. to take a look at what some others were doing to serve needs beyond simply food. And the germ of the idea for the Caring Center was born. The people who were working on it knew one thing: they didn't want people to come through a line to be served. Instead, they wanted our volunteers to serve our guests, to treat people as guests at a common table. And so they dropped the idea of a soup kitchen and started referring to it as a dining center. Over the course of 1992, they went from group to group to group in order to solicit enthusiasm and to get support for this idea, so that by the end of 1992, just before they were ready to launch, they had over 200 volunteers ready to go. A testament to Christian commitment, if I've ever heard one. And so it was that on January 17th, 1993, 28 years ago, last Sunday, the dining center opened for the first time. They cleaned out a portion of the basement of 1010. They put out a sign on East Avenue, made some soup on a stovetop that had only one of the four burners working, and waited. Seven guests came that first day, and there were 12 volunteers. As Rand Warner would later say, it was the last day there would be more volunteers than guests. One of the volunteers, Ed Crosby, that day pushed everybody else who was volunteering to kick in some money so that maybe they could make this go for another week. That is, they could chip in a little bit to make sure they had food for the next week. And it began just like that, on a shoestring budget, doing the best they could with dented cans, a stovetop that didn't work, and no working oven. And yet, utensil by utensil, plate by plate, meal by meal, it began to grow, and the need began to grow alongside it. Just a couple of months in, they launched the caring portion, which would eventually go on to have bicycle repair, showers, laundry, hair care, that would offer GED classes and computer classes, that would expand to help the lost boys of South Sudan when they arrived in this area, and thousands of others throughout the years. Not just guests, but volunteers have found their soul renewed and a thirst they didn't know they had quenched in that space. Though the space itself, still in the basement of 1010 East Avenue, has never been adequate. never been accessible to all of those who need its services. Of course, our care as a congregation has extended beyond food and beyond clothing to the full needs of the human body. Working in a visioning process in 2007 and 2008, an idea came forth about perhaps opening a medical clinic on our campus. Now, it's hard to believe for us right now, but 12 years ago, there was still a problem with healthcare in our country. And so they thought they would try and do their best to try and meet it. They figured it was a no-brainer. After all, we had plenty of medical personnel on our campus, plenty of medical professionals who were volunteers, who were members of our congregation. Certainly, we should be able to do something like a medical clinic, only the insurance challenges proved to be almost a non-starter. Fortunately for us, one of the members of our church at the time, Dr. Mac Everts, was still at the University of Rochester and helped us connect to an idea that they were working on where medical students, first and second year, would, under the supervision of resident physicians, get some experience serving patients in a partnership with the medical school. And so we started the You Are Well Clinic. Working, of course, it was a win-win-win situation. The students getting some experience, our patients getting some care, and us getting to put our faith into action. We solicited the help of Dr. Nancy Schaefer Clark, along with Janet James and others who came in to try and make the medical center take off, the You Are Well Clinic take off. And so it was 12 years ago on January 15th, 2009. The You Are Well Clinic opened for the first time 12 years ago this very month. And while she wasn't there at the very beginning, anyone who's had any relation to the clinic over the last 12 years knows that it would not have gone. It wouldn't have gone so well. It wouldn't have continued to meet the need that it has without the help of Ida Hickman, a nurse with a big heart, who gave of herself and who has given of herself to make that clinic a reality. As we've been reminded so often in recent months, sometimes a good nurse makes all the difference. Because we have pigeonholed the You Are Well Clinic into some spaces that are closets, frankly, in our basement at 1040, shared space, it can only be open one night a week and nevertheless manages to meet 600 different patients in the course of a year. Imagine what we could do if it had a true home. There are other ministries, of course, we could speak about. We've done so much as a congregation to try and meet the changing needs of this community over the course of the last 80 years. But all of our ministries are in spaces that are no longer adequate to meet those needs. They each need a home, and the good news is we have one to offer. Friends, we spent 80 years centering outreach in our community. Now it's time for a center for outreach. We have spent 3 years now trying to raise enough funds to combine our dining and caring center, our storehouse, our You Are Well Clinic, and our grocery bag ministry into one accessible, holistic, and humanizing space, one where people can meet shared services and find their way. And we are so close, but we need your help to bring it home. We need your help to find our way to that last little bit so that we can finally meet the needs. Friends, they are only growing out there, and this is the time to do it. COVID has changed the game, and people are in more need now than ever before, and it is time for us to rise up and to meet that need, but we can only do it together. And so I ask on this Outreach Sunday that you consider a gift, a pledge to help support the Outreach Center. I know so many have already given to do this, including myself, but each of us is going to try and take it one last little bit forward so that we can find our way to building that center so that 80 years ago, when the people of Asbury first said, maybe this still has some potential as a house for the community, we can prove that they were right as we offer a home not just for ourselves, but for others, reminding each other of the call of Christ with the reminder that just as you did it to the least of these, you did it to me. May it be so. Amen.